From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Noe Valley.
Napa, California.
I live in the Castro.
Fillmore District.
Vernal Heights.
Oakland, California.
Coming up, we'll find out what happens when journalists and artists join forces to shine a light on Richmond's broken housing projects.
Every ghetto is a shame. I'm poor no matter where my address is. I'm black.
Then we hear from local Muslim men as they open up their hearts and talk about love.
When necessary, my cardiologist can read every heartbeat from the moment he fired it up inside me.
And we'll take you to the place where we recorded this week's mystery sound.
They're usually kind of dingy and a little smelly and old and damp, and so that part of it has never changed.
We'll be stepping inside today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. Today, you can find news stories in almost any format. An article in the newspaper comes out simultaneously as a radio story or gets paired with an online video that then gets pushed to an app on your smartphone or appears in short bursts on your Twitter feed. But how about turning news stories into poetry? Or investigative reports into live theater? That's the idea behind a collaboration between journalists and spoken word artists meant to bring investigative reporting to life. KALW's Julie Kane brings us the story.
I've been Raggedy Brown for quite some time now. I'm decades past a youthful spirit. Jagged doors creak moans of sorrow like rust in my veins. I'm a harbor field full of pain. It'll be a blessing once again if I last till tomorrow. Cause I've been Raggedy Brown for quite some time now. With this infection,
Dante Clark stands in the middle of a dimly lit stage. A projected photo of a dilapidated apartment building flickers on the wall behind him. In this scene, he's speaking as the voice of the building.
Somebody needs to speak on behalf of these peoples. Get them out of my custody and let me go. Cause I've been Raggedy Brown for quite some time now.
Clark is performing in a play called This Is Home at San Francisco's Tides Theater. The play tells the story of two housing projects in Richmond. Most of the people who live there are elderly or disabled. They pay rent on subsidized apartments overrun with mice and cockroaches and mold. Crime is common and security is lax.
A bedbug city, bottomless pit, a waiting space.
The thing that struck me was that, you know, people were complaining about these things and trying on their own to combat them.
That's Amy Julia Harris. She's a journalist with the Center for Investigative Reporting. She spent 9 months looking into the rampant neglect in Richmond's public housing.
It was just the housing authority was not responding or was not dealing with the problem.
According to the Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD, Richmond's housing authority is one of the worst run in the country. So bad that the feds are considering shutting it down. Harris wanted to know why. So she started poring over documents and public records.
There were financial problems, there were management problems, there were, you know, cases where the deputy director at the housing authority had steered contracts to his brother. They had misspent, you know, millions of dollars and had to repay it to the federal government.
She says she also found many cases of residents who made repair requests that were never addressed. Yet, housing authority documents show they were fixed. Residents say they've waited months, sometimes years, without getting any help. Disabled people stuck in upper-floor apartments because the elevators are broken. Leaking ceilings so bad that mold stalactites formed from the dripping water.
That really surprised me because I'd never seen, you know, stalactites outside of caves. And that was just kind of shocking to see that, and something that, you know, you could actually see had gotten so bad for years and years of just this dripping. That takes a long time. And that was just a very visual representation of how much this place had fallen into disrepair.
One woman she met trapped 12 mice during their two-hour conversation. A picture started to emerge, one with faces and names.
It was real people and no longer documents, and everyone had really compelling stories. I think that was when we started thinking of what are the different ways we can tell this story.
That's where a group called Raw Talent, or Richmond Artists with Talent, comes in. It's a theater and spoken word troupe focused on social justice in Richmond. The members are all in their 20s.
I see barren hallways, broken cameras, uninvited guests. There's no service here. As if a sea of people were cast away on an island to fend for themselves. The weather outside is frightening.
That's William Hartfield, one of the performers in This Is Home. He and the other Raw Talent poets partnered with Amy Julia Harris to bring her stories from Richmond's housing projects to life. They read her reporting, visited the buildings with her, and saw conditions firsthand. Then they wrote spoken word pieces about what they'd seen and turned those pieces into a stage play.
There wasn't any service there. Like, in my piece is, like, basically exactly what I saw. I put everything that I felt and saw within that piece.
Hartfield plays a squatter, an old man, and he also wrote This Is Home, the poem the play is named for.
Land, mind your business. Pay no mind to that dead body that just fell from the top floor the other night. Silence has become an ally to fear. The fear of being evicted, like a sickness, the madness of this reality soaks into a simple statement. Better here than out there, because this is home.
My whole approach was to, like, see me for who I am, recognize that some paths in life haven't been chosen, but we make the best of what we have, and that you're only a paycheck away.
Some characters are made up, drawn from the lives of the many people the poets met or read about. Others are based more directly on real people. Like Helen Hall, known as Mama Hall, a resident in her 80s who patrols her building as a self-appointed security guard. She's played here by Tatiana Willis.
Who would have known my better days would be behind me? See, I thought by 81 I would have earned my keep. But I keep keeping on strong like these old bruised bones. I ain't broken. I'm broke.
Willis didn't actually meet Mama Hall before she wrote these lines. Instead, she had to imagine what it would be like to be elderly and alone, trying to keep things together in a place crumbling around her.
And then I'm like, how do you go through hardships and all in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s into the 2000s with all the hardships and changes, especially for people of color, and then at the end of your life, you don't get a chance to sleep and rest and go on vacation.
I'ma go tell it on the mountain. For the soul's too weak to weep. Bones that creak, I worked my whole life. And I know pain. And I know sacrifice. But I don't know how many moons I got left. So tell me what I'm supposed to do, huh?
What are people like Mama Hall supposed to do? Since Harris's article came out in early 2014, government officials in Richmond began an investigation. They found living conditions so bad in one building that the city council voted to evacuate residents. But the housing authority is $7 million in debt, so where residents will go and who pays to relocate them is unknown.
Every ghetto is the same. I'm poor no matter where my address is. We black. You know what that mean? They gonna see you where they see you. Flip your ass like a penny in the well. Wherever you land, that's where you're gonna be. All I'm saying is...
The play ran for 2 weeks in San Francisco. A video version is in the works. Raw Talent poet DeAndre Evans says theater is one way to shine a light on what's happening in Richmond, but it's not a solution to the actual problems.
I like to talk about what's going on, but I also like to give my input on how it can be better. Right now, we ain't really showed that and This Is Home. It's just kind of like, this is what the issue is. This is what's going on. This is how we living. Tomorrow is going to be better. And it's like, that's dope. How, though?
How is an open question. Amy Julia Harris's reporting is ongoing. The city of Richmond has asked the federal government to pay for relocating the residents, but a decision on that won't be made for several months. For Cross Currents, I'm Julie Kane.
This is where rodents and roaches are like family. because we share the same meals. Top ramen.
This Is Home was produced as part of Off Page and Storyworks, two collaborations between the journalists of CIR, the Center for Investigative Reporting, spoken word artists, and actors. CIR works with Youth Speaks and Tides Theater in San Francisco on these projects.
Bathroom sink, replace bathtub. Only place where I can wash my body. Everybody come through the door except people who repair. Why are elevators broken in a place made for people who are disabled? How can we use stairs when we roll the wheels of our chairs and lean our bodies on canes?
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Just like performance art, literature has the power to shed light on a possibly misunderstood or stereotyped population. 2 years ago, we interviewed two local Muslim women, not about Islamophobia or wearing headscarves, but about their intimate stories of love. These stories were told in an anthology called Love Inshallah, The Secret Love Lives of American Muslim Women. Well, the book created such a stir, the editors Aisha Matu and Noura Maznavi were bombarded with letters from Muslim men saying, hey, we have love stories too, and we want to tell them. So this year witnessed the birth of Salam Love, American Muslim Men on Love, Sex, and Intimacy. Two contributors joined me in studio to talk about their stories in the book, Muhammad Shamma and Randy Nason. We start with Randy reading from his story about learning how to be a supportive husband when the going got tough.
And thus began my emotional metamorphosis. The husband and lover receded as the comforter and caregiver emerged. Being in love with Aisha, with that fiery newlywed passion, seemed unimaginable, because that aspect of love is largely self-serving and self-pleasing. I needed to dedicate the entirety of my emotional reserves to supporting her through a series of progressively aggressive exacerbations and medical procedures that were often frightening and occasionally dangerous.
Randy.
Mm-hmm.
Hello.
Hello. So my story is called Becoming Family, and it's really about my journey in becoming a husband and a father, and the emotional investment and the commitment that goes along with that. When we were first married, I didn't know what I was getting into. I suppose that I had an idea of what I thought marriage was going to be like, and I had no idea. And about 6 months into our marriage, Aisha became inexplicably and very seriously ill. And that rattled us. When this happened, it made it very, very clear to me that something wasn't right at the time with our marriage, with our relationship. And it was really because we didn't have enough of a foundation, or perhaps a deep enough foundation, where I was able to support her and connect with her on a substantial emotional level and help her through that process and through that ordeal. That didn't come until much later. And so it was very, very difficult for the first few years.
It's hard to talk about this.
Well,
was it hard to put it on paper?
Yes, it is. And this actually, what you're hearing right now is, it almost, it reflects how I was writing about it. It is so emotionally charged that it's difficult to maintain intellectual clarity while plumbing through the history that is, you know, was very trying and in some ways scarring, but ultimately it brought us closer together.
I've had my implantable cardioverter defibrillator for almost 6 months now. When necessary, my cardiologist can read every heartbeat from the moment he fired it up inside me, my rebirth. He tells me not to obsess about it, but I hear the echoes of my life like the very graphs printed before the doctor. I sing atop the peaks, roar in the valleys, and weep in the caves I've created along the way. Family dance time on Friday nights or Sunday mornings helps me forget about my midlife crisis. As my 5-year-old son, Karim, mimics Heidi's crazy hip line moves, I spin my daughter, Layla, round and around until we collapse together, dizzy with laughter. Then the world stops spinning, and I catch my breath.
My name is Mohammed Chama. By the time I got into university, I was definitely practicing on my own terms. It didn't mean praying 5 times a day. It did mean going to Friday prayer. It did mean that I wanted to stop playing 20 questions with girls I dated who were not Muslim, trying to defend Islam to them. It did mean that I wanted to seek a soulmate who was Muslim. For me, that was the extent of what I knew I wanted to do. And I was lucky, I guess, to find someone who was secular but had, you know, grew up in a family that, you know, Islam is part of the environment. It's like the trees. It's like the sky. It's like the river. It's like the the freeway sometimes. You know, it's like bridges. But you decide what type of Muslim you are. And that's how she was raised, and it made me feel so free.
And then you met Heidi.
Correct.
And what did Heidi do for you?
Heidi made me realize that Islam is much bigger, and Muslims are a much bigger group than I had ever imagined. She was a diver for the Egyptian national diving team. And I remember asking her one time, "You're a diver?" As in, like, diving off platform in 10 meter? And she's like, "Yeah, what's your problem?" And later she would tell me, "This guy probably is totally judging me, thinking that I should be covered." And that was not the case at all. I was trying to pinch myself. I couldn't believe this. And again, I'm, you know, 22 years old in Texas. You know, the only realm of Islam and Muslims I knew were my local mosque and the Egyptian and Arab community around me. Extremely conservative, but, you know, I knew no women who did this. And she was like, I could name 20 other girls that I dive with in Egypt. And I was like, it just opened up my eyes to a new definition of Islam and a new identity for myself as a Muslim.
Mm-hmm. What do you want readers to understand about Muslim men? This is a book about Muslim men's love lives. What do you think, Randy?
I would hope what they take away is that same recognition of we're all the same in that regard, that just because someone identifies with a particular faith, that doesn't make them an other, because, you know, it's that type of mindset that, you know, leads to a lot of awful things. You know, hopefully as people we can continue to evolve and move past some of these artificial barriers. Mm. You know, people have so much more in common than they do in difference.
We're humans, and we all, you know, we all have hearts that beat, and we all have stories inside of us.
Those were Mohammed Chama and Randy Nason, who tell their stories of love in the new book, Salam Love, American Muslim Men on Love, Sex, and Intimacy. Find a link to more stories at kalw.org. Click on Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. And before we leave you today, we want to share the story behind the audiograph sound we've been playing all week on KALW.
Oh, nice shot.
people who know me, that have known me for a long time, they know not to schedule any meetings Monday afternoon. They know I'm not going to be around Monday night because this is where I come.
All right, we asked you what you think it is and where in the Bay Area it's from, and we heard from a lot of you this week. You guessed racquetball, handball, even skee ball. But did you get it right? We sent KALW's Casey Miner out in the cold for the answer.
Ice rinks don't change that much. There's something about them. They're usually kind of dingy and a little smelly and old and damp and... So that part of it has never changed. There's something about an ice rink. My name is Mark Thompson. We're at Dublin, Iceland, out in Dublin, California. People who know me, that have known me for a long time, especially for work during the Monday, they know not to schedule any meetings Monday afternoon. They know I'm not going to be around Monday night because this is where I come. This is what I do.
I'm Rick Simmons, and we are at Dublin, Iceland for Monday night hockey, a tradition that goes back as far as the Monday night that the rink opened, 1974. I think I was here for the second Monday.
Oh, nice shot. Hey, I'm Eric Simmons, and we are at Dublin, Iceland, where I've been playing ice hockey for 10 or 15 years, but where I really grew up, where my dad's been playing ice hockey since I was born, and where I used to come, and where I learned how to swear from the goalies, and where they used to have chain link fence instead of glass on the boards. It's a great romantic place in my imagination. It's really a small, dinky, pitiful ice rink, and I love it dearly.
Hey, nice shot, Long Beach.
Hey, getting warmer.
How's the ice?
Yeah, it's a little sticky, I think. I'm just getting warmed up on it. I find it's warm tonight, so it's a little slow on the ice. It sort of drags. I suppose when it's colder and it just glides, there's a little stickiness to it. It's like pasta that's overcooked. You know, it's like it's sticky like that a little bit, you know, supposed to that smooth baby's ass kind of deal, you know.
Luke played high school hockey in the Maritime Provinces. He's quite a character.
You guys ever see each other outside of hockey, or you just hang out here?
Some of us see each other, you know, Mark and I will go to a ball game together, but not too many of them. Really not a spousal-oriented group. So hockey's hockey, and, you know, if I'm going to hang out with a bunch of hockey players, I might as well hang out with them at the hockey rink.
So bad.
A lot of nights you have to be very creative coming up with excuses for why you didn't play well, but when the ice is bad, you know, it solves all your problems right then and there. Oh, the ice is bad. What do you expect? The ice is awful.
To be fair, though, it is awful.
Getting warmer.
This week's winner is William Marvez. Congratulations, William. We're sending you a KALW t-shirt. For the rest of you, there will be another contest next week. In the meantime, visit our Facebook page to hear more from Audiograph. We're KALW. That's all for today's edition of Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Leela Day, Maya DePaula Hanica, Audrey Dilling, Laura Flynn, Nina Gensler-Debs, Christina Loring, Seth Samuel, Julia Scott, Stephen Short, Charlotte Silver, and Todd Whitney. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Our line producer was Ashley Ann Krigbaum. Our senior producers are Julie Kane and Jen Chien. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And thank you. We are listener-supported public radio. The song you're listening to is by a band from San Mateo called Parachute on Fire. While the band members all have different musical tastes, their motto is every song is a party. Parachute on Fire plays the Hotel Utah in San Francisco on Sunday. Music starts at 9 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba. Trying to gun down the latest threat. It's not a nuclear meltdown. It's you and me, everyone you see.